All right. Hey, I see some people walking in and stuff. Cool. Hey, do you guys have a Bible with you? We're going to go ahead and jump right into it this morning. If you guys have a Bible with you, we are thankful. We are happy to be together. We are so thankful that you guys would take the time and to be with us this morning. So if you guys have a Bible with you, would you guys go with me to Exodus chapter 20, Exodus chapter 20 and Mark chapter 2. Exodus chapter 20 and Mark chapter 2. This is part 4 of our 10-week series we're doing through the Ten Commandments. So Exodus chapter 20, I'm going to read verse 1 and 2 for context, and then we're going to jump down to verse 8, and then we're going to pray, yes? All right, Exodus chapter 20, verse 1 starts this way. And God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. Verse 8, remember the Sabbath day, to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is with you in your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, and rested the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. I think as a pastor, I wish it wasn't this way, but there are some messages that matter to me a little bit more than others. There are some messages that interest me a little bit more than others. And this is definitely one of those messages. This week, I was just talking to Gilbert, and what I'm going to share with you is not something that I'm trying to just like throw at you, or hey, you need to apply this to your life. This is something that God has been challenging me with. This is something that speaks to where I'm at in my life today, right now, this month. These past couple of weeks, this message speaks into my life, and I pray that God uses it to speak to your life. I don't think I need to show you statistics for you to know that we are living in a culture where more than ever, people are dealing with real emotions such as anxiety. I don't need to show you statistics for you to know that more than ever, people are dealing with emotions like stress, like exhaustion. And just like you, perhaps I myself deal with exhaustion. And I don't want to ignore the fact that there may be some of you who deal with one of these emotions. And many of us perhaps have been on the search for this rest, whether it's a spiritual rest, whether it's a physical rest, or whether it's an emotional rest. So no matter what we believe about God, I think all of us could use a little bit less stress in our life. No matter what you believe about God, I think all of us could use a little less anxiety in our life. And no matter what you believe about God, I think all of us can use a little less exhaustion in our life. And I pray that as we consider God's word today, speaking on the Sabbath, Mark chapter 2, I pray that we may leave this room a little more hopeful about the future, that we may leave this room a little bit like more with this deep rest, knowing that the finished work of Jesus gives us rest. Yes, so I'd like to take the next 30 minutes or so, and I've titled this message, Rhythm of Rest. Rhythm of rest. And we're going to pray. And after we pray, we're going to jump right into it. Yes. All right. Jesus, I thank you so much for this morning, for everyone here, for those who could not make it this morning. I pray that wherever we find ourselves in this journey of faith and this journey of life, would you encounter us with your love? Would you encounter us with your grace, Jesus? May we step into this, this topic with boldness, Jesus. Would we step into this topic knowing that you are the one that gives us deep rest. You invite us to this rest, this fellowship with you, Jesus. As we discover your word together, would we step into the rhythm you've placed for our life? Jesus, we thank you, and we pray this all in your name, and we all say amen. Have you ever been on a bad date? Now I know most of you are relationship experts, and I know you guys have your life together. Y'all are perfect, but I've been on some bad dates. And when we think of bad dates, automatically we think of what someone else did or did not do. Like if you're a girl, it's like he made me pay for the food. Or perhaps he didn't open the door for me. Or perhaps this other person is shallow, and maybe you thought they were going to be outgoing, and maybe you thought there was going to be a lot of conversation, but there wasn't. It was just a bad date. Now, so when we think of bad dates, we think of things other people did. Now, how about this one? Have you ever been the reason of a bad date? Have you ever been the reason why the date was bad? Now, again, I know all of you guys are relationship experts, but I remember one moment when I was in high school, when I was a junior in high school, I asked this güerita to go with me to homecoming, and it was the first dance I'd ever been to in my life, and I was like super excited, and I like this is the first dance I'm ever gonna go to, so I asked her to go to homecoming with me. So as like the day of homecoming comes, and to be honest with you, I thought that for like 3 hours we were gonna slow dance. It's a true story. For 3 hours, I thought we were just gonna, you know, there's like a romantic slow dance, the one like I practiced that in front of the mirror, like we good. Like, I grew up listening to Chris Tomlin, you know, Toby Mac, City on Our Knees. Like, if you know, you know. Like, that's what I grew up with. So dancing was not a thing in my family. Don't you dare dance in this home, right? So I asked this girl to homecoming. We get to homecoming, and to my surprise, my biggest nightmare became a reality. They start playing like Despacito. At that time, it wasn't around, but they start playing like music that I didn't know how to dance to. I was expecting slow dance music. Now, this girl was like, hey, let's dance. And pray for me, I'm very proudful. I told her I was going to go to the restroom. And in reality, I stepped out of this room, and there was this balcony outside, and I literally stood there for like a good 30 minutes, just like, you know, pacing. I was frustrated with myself. I was mad at myself. I was like, when is this going to be over? And this girl eventually comes outside, and she's like, hey, what's wrong? Why aren't you inside dancing? And, you know, I apologize. I was like, hey, I'm so sorry. I just can't dance. I have no rhythm. And she looks at me, true story. She looks at me, and she's like, how do you not have rhythm? Remember, Guerita. She's like, how do you not have rhythm? You're Mexican. I was like, oh, shoot. And I was like, she got a point, you know? And I was thinking about rhythm this week. I think when it comes to dancing, rhythm is very important. Rhythm is very important. Now, I think dancing is a lot like life. How many of you know that when you dance, you don't dance the same way, at the same pace, through every song? Like try imagining like someone trying to dance cumbia to like slow dance music, or vice versa, someone slow dancing to cumbia music. You just can't do it. You can't dance at the same, you can't, through like all the songs, you can't dance the same way. And in order to be effective in dancing, you need to match the rhythm of the song. Yes? And bear with me. I think that we live in a culture where so many people find themselves frustrated with life, that they find themselves exhausted. I think it's because they've been dancing to the wrong rhythm. They've been dancing to the rhythm God has not placed in their life. Now, this is where it gets interesting. The thing about rhythm, what separates rhythm from noise is not how loud something is. What separates rhythm from noise is not the loudness. What separates rhythm from noise is the pauses in between. See, rhythm has pause. Noise is just like, that's noise. Now rhythm has pauses. Rhythm, I'm not going to play, but rhythm has breaks. For example, Everyone clap with me. Cool. What did we just do? That was rhythm. You guys matched the rhythm that we were clapping on. I think life is all about finding the rhythm that God has given us in life. And I think we live in a culture that's so addicted to the noise because it's flashy. We're so addicted to the noise because it stands out. And we exhaust ourselves when in reality, God has set a pace, God has set a rhythm in our life. And part of this rhythm requires pauses. It requires rest. We come to a story, we come to the fourth commandment in the book of Exodus, and it speaks of rest. It speaks of the rhythm God has set for our life. Exodus chapter 20 begins this way. I'm going to read it to you. Remember the Sabbath. Keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do work. But the seventh day is the Sabbath, the Sabbath of the Lord your God. So this is what you do on the Sabbath. In it you shall not work, nor you nor your son nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor the cattle, nor a stranger who is in your home. For 6 days the Lord has made the heavens and the earth, the seas, and all that is in them, and he rested the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. What we just read is the longest explanation of a commandment. Like commandment number 4 has the longest explanation out of all the other 10 commandments. This is the commandment that is mentioned the most in the Old Testament. The Sabbath simply means deep rest or deep peace. That's what it means. Deep rest or deep peace. God is commanding his people to rest. Now, furthermore, at the end of this verse 8, it tells us, keep this day holy. Now, holy is a big theological word that simply means set apart. So what God is commanding his people is this. Hey, I want you to set a day apart where you can find deep rest. Now by nature, I ask a lot of questions, and I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Pray for me. I'm not sure. But this week I was asking God. I was like, God, are you kidding me? For reals? Like, rest made your top 10 list? Like, okay, I get it. I'm only supposed to have one God. Makes sense. I get it that I shouldn't have other idols. Makes sense. I get it that I shouldn't use your name in vain. Makes sense. I get it I should honor my parents. Makes sense. I get it I shouldn't commit adultery. Makes sense. I get it that I shouldn't bear false witness against someone. Makes sense. I get it that I shouldn't be jealous for, like, again, like what my friend has. I get that, but really, rest? And if I asked you, like, hey, do you believe you should rest? I think many of us would say yes, but the reality is that our lives say otherwise. This is one of those commandments that really doesn't make sense. God, why in the world would you ask us to rest? And I know we grew up with hustle, 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 grind while they sleep, right? Like, make the bread while they sleep. Like, we grew up, like, with this stuff. And sometimes parents, you know, they're on their kids so much because you don't want the life that you grew up with. So you tell them, grind, grind, grind. And then God's like, you're asking me why you're exhausted? You're asking me why? I've set a rhythm for your life. Now, whose rhythm are you listening to? So God sets his rhythm of life. He's like, hey, you guys need to pause. You guys need to pause. Now, God cares about the Sabbath so much so that someone in the Old Testament once died. Literally, he died. Got killed because he worked on the Sabbath. Now imagine, like imagine you died because you didn't come to Semilla one day. Like, yo, this person would be freaking popping, packed. We'd be setting chairs up in the back. Now, this happened in real life once. Obviously, times have changed. But, like, imagine, like, just mess around. Think about this. Like, imagine you don't come to Semilla one day because you went to go work. You die. You get to heaven. You meet Stephen, the one that died in the book of Acts for the gospel. You meet him, and he's like, yo, dude, how'd it happen? How'd you die? How'd you make it up here? Oh, did you also die for the gospel? Oh, no. Are you a missionary? And you're like, no, I missed Sunday and I actually worked. Like, It just doesn't make sense. You at least have to be curious as to why God cares so much about the Sabbath. It got me curious this week. I was like, why would someone die, literally die, just because they were grinding, you know, work while they sleep? And it got me thinking very quick. I want to answer these questions. Number one, what did the Sabbath mean for the people in the Old Testament? How does Jesus deal with the Sabbath? That's number two. And at the very end, I want to give you, as a way of conclusion, I want to give you two things as to how the Sabbath applies for our life today. Yes? All right. So the first one is, what did the Sabbath represent? What did the Sabbath mean for the people in the Old Testament? In Exodus chapter 31, verse 13, God tells Moses this. Speak also to the children of Israel, saying, surely my Sabbath you shall keep it as a sign, important, as a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you, that I am the Lord who saved you. Now, in other words, when we keep the Sabbath, when you rest one day, it's going to serve as a sign. Now, the question is, who is the sign for? Well, the sign is for the people. The sign is for the generations to come and for the nations surrounding them. Now, in antiquity times, a whole nation wouldn't take the day off. It was rare. Like, if someone took the day off, like, nations back in the day would be like, why are you taking the day off? It doesn't make sense. Don't you know we got some bills to pay around here? Like, why are you taking the day off? Now, people's curiosity served as an opportunity for God's people to let them know about creation. Hey, well, this is why we rest, because God created the day in six days. The seventh day, he rested. So it served as an opportunity to share what God had done through creation. Now, bear with me. In Deuteronomy chapter 5, Moses restates the Ten Commandments. And in it, he expands a little bit more on commandment number 4. In Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 15, Moses, speaking of the Sabbath, says this. And remember when you were slaves in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. So not only was this a sign for the generations to come that God created the universe, but it was also a sign for the generations to come to remind themselves of what God did in Egypt. That God delivered his people, that God saved his people, that God parted the Red Sea, that God delivered, that God provided, that God guided them. So you see why it's a sign for the people. So for the people to take the Sabbath day off, it was like they were preaching a sermon without speaking. It created opportunities for them to share that there is a living God who created the universe, that there is a living God who delivered them from the hand of oppression, from the hand of slavery. You see, the Sabbath was a day of rest, but it was also a day of getting together to worship. And I know when we think of the Sabbath, it was funny, me and Gilbert were talking, and I was feeling a little sick this weekend, so I told Gilbert, like, yo, get ready in case you got to preach. And Gilbert joking texts me, yeah, I'm going to say, hey, we're talking about the Sabbath, let's pray and let's all go to sleep, you know? And when we talk about the Sabbath, we think of rest, we think of, oh, you know, I'm just going to crash in front of the TV, I'm just going to turn the TV on, play, you know, beat all these people at FIFA, you know? Doesn't matter, David, but whatever. When we think of rest, we think of, oh, I'm just going to chill, you know, watch the Netflix show, get my favorite snacks, and just, like, numb myself out for, like, 3 hours, because that's what I need to rest. Now, the Sabbath is not that. The Sabbath is not crash in front of a TV for 3 hours and just numb yourself. What the Sabbath was, according to the Old Testament, it was a moment where people would get together, where people would come together, where they would worship together, where they would rest, not only physically, but their souls would get rest. It was a day where they could do soul inventory, if I could put it that way. It was a day that God gave his people, hey, I know that life is busy. I know you're out there grinding, but hey, take one day off. Take care of your soul. Take one day to worship me. Take one day to realign your priorities. Take one day to rest. Take one day to go to church together with your family. Take one day together to actually invest in your marriage. Take one day to actually invest in the life of your children. Take one day to actually intentionally go together, worship together, grow together, get nourished together. rest. And God knows that our mind is grind, 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 and we grew up with that mentality, like work while they sleep. God knows this, and he loves us enough that he knows that we're not wired to grind, 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 grind. God knows we need rest. Scientifically, it's proven that if you do not rest, you'll die quicker. And if you love your family, rest. Be there for your family. And I remember Lalo told me this. He told me this, and I'm getting challenged, you know. God's been speaking to me. This is crazy. The Sabbath, it's about caring for yourself so that you can present yourself to serve God, have fellowship with God, and serve people. That's what the Sabbath. Now I remember, was it last year we were at Hidden House, and Lala was like, "Bro, I'm gonna be real with you." He's like, "You gain weight, bro." I was like, dang, I know. And he goes, "Bro, you need to take care of yourself." I'm starting keto on Monday again. But it just comes with this idea of you need to rest, bro. You need to take care. God has entrusted you with this body. God has entrusted you with this life. He's entrusted you with this family. How are you being a good steward with what God's let you borrow? Rest. It's the rhythm of life God has set for us. So God gave the Sabbath. The Sabbath was a gift to God's people. It was the rhythm God had set for the people. But surely enough, like anything, give it a little bit of time and people are going to start putting rules around that thing. And here we come to Jesus. How did Jesus deal with the subject of the Sabbath? Now history tells us that when Jesus stepped into the scene in the Gospel of Matthew, there were already 39 laws around the Sabbath. So pretend this is the law of the Sabbath. There was 39 things around this cup that people could not do. Now the religious leaders did these laws. So they said, if you don't break these 39 laws, there's no way you're going to break this one. And instead of it being a day of rest, instead of it being a day of nourishment, instead of it being a day of joy, of enjoyment, it became a day of oppression, of people saying, what can I do and what can I not do? So I love Jesus because Jesus both celebrates the Passover, but he also steps into it. He keeps it. Now there was these 39 laws around the Sabbath. Now I love Jesus because Jesus does not care about these 39 laws that are man-made laws. It's this idea that we call nowadays legalism. It was the law, and legalism is man-made rules around something God said. And God had no problem squashing and squandering these things. And God kept the Sabbath. God honored the Sabbath. God celebrated the Sabbath. But these 39 things, God had no problem saying, that's not true. Let me show you how he does it. In Mark chapter 2, there's a story where, if you're there, I ask you to be there. Mark chapter 2, I want to read it to you. Verse 23, and I'll read it to you if you're not there. Mark chapter 2, you can write this down. This is Jesus in the Sabbath. Now, it happened that he went through the grain fields of on the Sabbath. And as they went, his disciples began to pluck the heads of grain. And the Pharisees said to him, the pastors of the day, they said, "Look, why do they do what is lawful on the Sabbath? Why are they breaking the 39 rules around the Sabbath?" And then Jesus said, "Have you not read what David did when he was in need and hungry? He and those with him, how he went into the house of God in the days of Abiathar the high priest and ate the showbread, which is not lawful to eat except for the priest, and also gave some to those who were with him." And he said, Jesus said this, "The Sabbath was made for man and not the man for Sabbath. Therefore, the Son of Man is also the Lord of the Sabbath." So in this story, Jesus is walking by some grain fields with his disciples, and they get hungry. So the disciples start getting some wheat, and the Pharisees, the religious leader, the people that thought they were righteous, they call out Jesus, like, "Hey, Jesus, dude, why are your disciples doing what the law tells us not to do?" And Jesus hits them with this. "Hey, the Sabbath was not made for man. The day of rest, the day of rest was made for man. The man was not made for the day of rest." In other words, when did the day of rest become a day of burden? When did the day of rest become a day of following these rules? Literally the next chapter in Mark chapter 3, Jesus walks into a synagogue. He walks into a church kind of like this. He sees a man with a withered hand and asks the man, hey, stand up. Jesus looks around the room. This room, of course, is full of religious leaders, people who thought they were righteous. And Jesus asks, hey, is it lawful to do good or to do evil on the Sabbath? Everyone stays quiet. Jesus heals this man. And the Bible tells us that immediately the religious people got up, they left, and they started to figure out how they were going to kill Jesus. And this is what's interesting. It's interesting what religion will do. These religious leaders are so worked up about Jesus breaking commandment number 4, which is keep the Sabbath, yet they have no problem breaking commandment number 6, which is do not commit murder. He's breaking commandment number 4. He's not resting, and yet on that same passage, they're plotting on how they're going to murder Jesus. And that's exactly what religion does. It makes sin look worse on other people than it does on yourself. It causes you to look at someone else and say, you're not doing this, but it's okay if I do this, because we justify it. We add things, it's because he. And that's exactly what religion does. It makes things look worse on other people. It projects judgment, but it desires grace in return. And Jesus, when he steps on earth, he didn't come to reform religion. Jesus came to take away and replace religion with himself. He came to switch it with the relationship. And fast forward in Luke chapter 13, this is the last time that Jesus preaches inside of a church, the last time Jesus preaches inside of a synagogue. The Bible tells us that as the service was going on, this woman who had been ill for 18 years could not straighten up her back. Now, it wasn't 5 years. Like, imagine being ill for 18 long years. 18 years of pain, 18 years of sorrow, 18 years of people looking down at you, because socially at that time, if you were sick, people automatically assumed that was God's judgment on your life. Oh, you're sick. You've been sick for 18 years because it was a sin you committed. Why don't you turn that over to the Lord and maybe he'll forgive you? Why don't you turn that over to the Lord and maybe he'll heal you? 18 years of pain and sorrow. And at that time, there was no cars, no Uber, no nothing. Like, you got to walk to everything. And this woman walks into church, a woman who perhaps convinced herself that she would never be healed, and she walks into church, and Jesus heals her. Jesus sets her free from this spirit that was holding her. Bible tells us. Now you would think, right, like the pastors would be like super excited. Yes, the prayer has been answered. Yes, she's finally healed. You would assume that the religious leaders would be so happy that this woman that was burdened for 18 years would be set free. Yet these religious leaders, immediately when Jesus healed them, their hearts were hardened. Why? Religion. Religion. And finally, in Luke 14, Jesus on the Sabbath, he walks to have dinner into this home of these religious leaders. And it so happened to be that this man with this illness appears. And the Bible tells us that the religious leaders were observing Jesus closely to see what Jesus would do. Would Jesus heal this man on the Sabbath? So then again, Jesus asks, hey, is it lawful for me to heal this man? No one responds anything. Jesus heals this man. And the big question is, why does Jesus get mad with religious leaders in all these encounters? Because the Sabbath in reality was about restoring the diminished. The Sabbath in reality was about repairing the broken. The Sabbath in reality was about caring for other people. The Sabbath in reality was about setting the captives free. The Sabbath in reality was about showing mercy to others. And for Jesus to did what he did on the Sabbath, what Jesus did on these events is exactly what the Sabbath is all about. It's about showing mercy. It's about loving other people. It's about caring for people. It's about it's all about setting the captives free. It's about restoring the broken. See, the religious leaders were so consumed with these 39 laws that they could not, they missed out on the joy that God wanted them to experience on this day. Now, I want you to think of two paradigms. I want you to think of one paradigm being the religious legalistic view, And I want on the next paradigm, I want you to picture someone who has received the gospel and knows it's not about works, but it's by grace. When God gives a commandment of rest, this paradigm of religion is saying, hey, put these rules. It's like, I don't want to break them because my performance is very important to God. So if I break this law, God's not going to love me. So I'm going to put these 39 laws so that, you know, I'm going to protect myself. And what was supposed to be a day of rest is now a day of burden. Don't break that. Now, this paradigm of grace, love, mercy, it's God gives us this day of rest. Now, in this day, I'm going to enjoy it. It's not a day of burden. It's not about my works. It's about God restoring my soul, Psalms 23. It's God leading me by still waters, Psalm 23. It's two paradigms. How the same law can mean different things to the religious paradigm and to the gospel paradigm. Right? And this Jesus steps into this. Jesus didn't come to kind of repair religion. Jesus came to take it away completely and replace it with himself. So the Sabbath day is not a day to be lazy. It's not a day to crash in front of the TV. The Sabbath day is to do good. Yes? And Jesus did not come to reform religion. He came to replace it with himself. And Jesus does exactly that. In Mark chapter 2, what we just read towards the end of the passage, I don't know if you caught it, Jesus said, I am the Lord of the Sabbath. And we saw that the Sabbath means deep rest or deep peace. Now for Jesus to say that he is the Lord of the Sabbath, what Jesus is essentially saying is that he is the source of deep rest. That he is the source of the deep rest you and I need. You see, the coming of Jesus has changed the way that you and I view the Sabbath. He changes the way we rest. Now, in the book we're reading, it kind of puts it this way. So when I don't play the guitar, but let's say I played the guitar, right? And I'm playing in the key of C. And then Hector comes up and Hector's like, hey, I want you to play in the key of A. The chords change, right? But the melody doesn't. That's what the coming of Jesus does. It kind of transposes the key, but it doesn't change the melody. That's what Jesus does. So here are the Ten Commandments. Jesus steps into the picture. The key of the song changes, but the melody stays the same. Back in the day, it was rest one day, so you get a little glimpse of what it's going to be like one day. Jesus steps into the picture, and Jesus is saying, you're going to find rest in me. I am the Lord of the Sabbath. So the day, the way we rest now is a little different than how the people in the Old Testament rested. And here's the first one, and as a way of conclusion. The first thing, what does commandment number 4 mean for us today? Number 1, we need to trust God enough to rest. Now we talked about this. We grew up with the grind mentality, and God is saying, hey, I've set this rhythm for your life. I've set this rhythm. I've designed you in a way that you need rest. God has weaved into creation the rhythm of rest. And when we step outside of this rhythm that God has set for our lives, then we have to sustain that. So God sets this rhythm of life. Hey. Everything you do is in this rhythm. Remember, rhythms have pauses. And when we work outside of this rhythm, when we make noise, we have to sustain that. And that's where exhaustion comes. That's where anxiety comes. That's where stress comes. Because you're worrying about something that God has not asked of you. And God said, hey, would you trust me enough that you'll join me on this rhythm that I've set for your life? You see, and God knows we will not stop, so he makes it a commandment. Someone once said, if the devil can't get in front of you to stop you, he'll get behind you to push you. If the devil can't get in front of you to stop you, he'll get behind you to get you busy. And normally busy is not bad things. Busy sometimes is a good, we get busy doing good things. And the devil's cool with you being busy with good things as long as, you know, you don't care for your family. God is busy with you doing good things as long as you, like, don't have your devotion with God. The devil's, like, cool with you doing good things, doing ministry, as long as you don't got a relationship with God. If the enemy can't get in front of you, he'll get behind you and push you and start making you get busy with good things. And that's outside the rhythm of rest that God has for us. And what would our life look like? What would your marriage, your family, our mental health look like if we step into this rhythm that God has set for our life? We're saying, hey, I want you to take inventory. I want you to take a day. Be intentional about spending time with me. Be intentional about spending time with the people I've entrusted you with. Be intentional about taking care of your mental health, of your well-being. I know life is stressful. I know life is hard. Hey, and I'm giving you this gift of rest. In this day of rest, we worship God. But part of that worship is actually trusting God enough to rest. God invites us to this lifestyle. Now, number two, and this is kind of where I want to land this thing. This is the one that was more important to me this week, and this kind of speaks as to where I'm at in life right now. Number two is we need to rest on Jesus' finished work. We lived in a performance-based culture, which has led many of us to these real emotions of anxiety, stress, and exhaustion. We've convinced ourselves in this society, right? A performance-based culture. We've convinced ourselves that our worth is tied to our productivity. We've convinced ourselves that our worth is attached to our performance. That if we do this right, then I'm going to be loved. And if I do this right, then I'm going to be valued. And if I do this, then I'm going to be appreciated. And whether that it's in a relationship, whether that's at work, whether that's with your friendships, or whether that's in ministry, if I step into this room and I project the right vibe, you know, if I'm just loving people and I'm just, you know, being outgoing, then people are going to love me and people are going to value me because I'm the pastor. But if I don't, if I want, like, so now it's about performance. And what happens is we don't get the results we want, and we think to ourselves, oh, I just need to try harder. I just need to try harder to project, and I just need to, you know, try harder to make these connections. I just need to try harder, and we get exhausted, and then anxiety kicks in, and then stress about the future, and then we have a whole culture that is so emotionally unstable, and it all is rooted on this idea that it's because we're not resting on the finished work of Jesus. If we believe that Jesus lived the life we should have lived, if we believe that Jesus died the death we should have died, then we must be convinced 100% that God is 100% satisfied with you, meaning you no longer have to live to perform. You no longer live to make noise in life because God is satisfied with you. You don't live life to be approved by other people because God approves of you. You don't have to live life living and acting so people can love you because God has already loved you. You don't have to live life to show your worth, to prove yourself worthy because God has already made you worthy. And the reason why we deal with these emotions, it's because we say we believe, but in reality, our hearts say otherwise. You see, the coming of Jesus changes the way we rest. When Jesus was on the cross, he said, "It is finished." You can rest from that. You don't have to live a performance-based life. You can rest from that. You see, Jesus lived the life we should have lived. He died the death we should have died. You see, what the Sabbath is really about, it's about making Jesus the center of who we are. It means that we are no longer looking for the approval of others, no longer looking for our own righteousness, but we trust that when Jesus said it was finished, that we can now rest and take a deep breath and say, yes, I am valued. Yes, I have worth. It's this deep rest. And if I'm being honest with you, you know, these past couple of months have, and this is something that, you know, me, Tigger, Bird, and Cynthia, we sat together last Thursday or two Thursdays ago. And this is, you know, this is just kind of opening my heart to where I'm at in life. And, you know, being a pastor is not easy. And I think we have this idea in society and in culture that the pastor does not deal with what we all deal with. And we think that the pastor is one level higher than people. And we've convinced ourselves that pastors are immune to emotions. And we forget that we're all human. And you know, these past couple of months have been tough on me emotionally. You know, this exhaustion, tiredness. And to be honest with you, for 2 years, you know, we've been going as a church. We've had, you know, days where, you know, this place has been full, days where there's like no one. And it's this thing that I wish it wasn't that way, but at the end of the day, the stress falls on me. Is it because I'm not doing enough? Is it because I'm not projecting enough? Is it because am I not inviting enough? Is it because, and I've gotten myself, and I'm being honest with you, these past couple of months have been a cycle of not living in the rhythm that God has had for my life. And I've been trying to make noise, and I've been trying to do things. People aren't coming. Why is it not happening? God, and I've been trying to build the church that God wants to build himself. And it's official. I'm done trying to build this, and I'm going to let God build it. I'm done stressing over church. I'm done stressing over, I got to grind and I got to work while other pastors sleep. I'm done. And I'm stepping into this reality that I'm resting on the finished work of Jesus, that my value is not based on how many chairs we fill, that my value is that my worth is not defined by how many people come into this church, but that my value is on Jesus. And if Jesus looks down at me and says, I am pleased with you, if God gives me the okay, then that's fine with me. And what we do as a church is no longer let's fill the seats. It's stepping into the reality of the finished work of Jesus that I can now rest. And to be honest with you, I talked with Gilbert and Cynthia about, you know, taking 3 months off and, you know, during the summer, I really didn't speak as much. It was every other week. And then I told Gilbert and Cynthia, hey, you know, I just need to take time off, you know, maybe 3 months. And maybe I just need to like leave the country for a while and just, you know, go somewhere else and just, you know, and then come back and, you know, be ready. And something that God kind of just spoke into my heart is like, David, you can take all the vacations you want, but when you come back, you're still going to be tired. You can take all the vacations in the world all the time, but if you don't rest on my finished work, then this is going to happen in 6 months, a year down the road. You're going to be at the same exact spot. And God has challenged me. And this is not something I'm trying to preach at you. This is something that I'm living. I'm there with you. And God has asked for me to step into the rhythm that he's placed on our life. And it's this rest. Rest on the finished work of Jesus, because he cares for you, because he loves you. And we're not going to stop. We're going to continue going forward. And I do encourage you, take inventory of where you're at. What are you doing in your life? Is there exhaustion in your life? And could it be because you're trying to work outside of this rhythm that God has placed for your life? Yeah? Would you guys pray with me? Yes? Jesus, I thank you for today, and I thank you because you invite us into this rhythm of rest. Life can be so stressful, and life can be, you know, we get so consumed with it's all about performance, and it's all about, you know, I just got to prove my worth, and I just got to, you know, if I do this, then people will love me, and people will value me. But Jesus, would we all step into the reality that you've invited us to this rhythm of rest, this rhythm of grace, this rhythm of love, where we can, you know, take deep breaths, and we can take, you know, as it tells us, you know, take that deep breath and find that deep peace inside of us. Jesus, we thank you so much. We love you. We adore you. And we all say together, amen.